Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. I know day two of the Local Government Leadership Academy is a busy day and a full day for you folks. So we're going to keep going with momentum. We don't want to lose you, so we're going to pile right into the very light topic of regional districts here this afternoon. Lots of experts in the room on this and lots of experience in the room, and we're very happy to also have an experienced duo of presenters here this afternoon. So the purpose of this is to just consider and do an overview of the topic of regional districts. I'm going to introduce Kelly Daniels. Kelly is he's semi-retired. Think about that. That means you have options in retirement. So that's a great, he's retired from the local government scene. He had over 35 years in local government with a diversity in his career as a city manager and CEO of regional governments. He's worked in communities with populations from 25,000 to 360,000 and worked with councils and boards from size of 9 to 23 elected officials in both Alberta and BC. He retired in 2013 from the Capital Regional District. Kelly has served on the board of directors for the Canadian Association of Municipal Administrators for over 9 years, representing both Alberta and British Columbia. We are going to have Kelly lead in, provide an overview, and then we'll actually have Rona Martin, who I think you know from earlier today, come forward and offer a few comments in terms of validating what's been in the presentation. So without further ado, I'll turn the presentation over to Kelly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. And it's great to be here. I know this is billed as a newly elected officials seminar, but I also know there's a lot of returning elected officials. This is a very popular event every time it occurs, and welcome and hello to all of them, particularly to Mary Markup, my own electoral area director. I hope what I'm going to present today, it's really, I think, oriented more to newly elected officials, but I hope some of you who have been around for a while, a little more experienced, get something out of it as well. Particularly if you're new, I'm sure you come to local government and particularly to electoral area director and a regional board with lots of opinions and perspectives on regional districts. They're dysfunctional, they're complicated, they're not responsible to the electorate. Well, this presentation is going to provide some information, I believe, that will provide another perspective on that and maybe dispel some of those misconceptions and myths that I think a lot of the public have and maybe even some elected officials sitting around board tables have. There it is. So, regional districts, they are very unique in North America. There are many, many, many forms of regional government across North America and certainly Canada. There's none similar or even, in my estimation, close to the regional district system in British Columbia. And so we are going to sort of dismantle that a little bit and try and help you understand a little bit about how it functions. And those differences often make them really influence the personality of regional districts. And as you'll see, there's exactly 27 regional districts, and each one of them has that own unique personality and set of services. They are really partnerships. They're mechanisms for partnerships between urban and rural areas, ultimately. And arguably, one of the most important parts of that partnership is the provision of services. And I am on the verge of a cold, so I'm going to be taking lots of water during this presentation, if I don't spill it first. So those services between municipalities, electoral areas, typically form three types of services, either a regional service, where all the participants on the regional district are involved, and we'll see some examples of that over the course of the next 45 minutes. Sub-regional services that are, combination of municipalities and municipalities and electoral areas and municipalities, electoral area and electoral areas. But you'll see the terminology sub-regional quite a bit throughout this presentation and in the next over the next 4 years of your career in regional districts. And local services at the rural area level particularly. Regional districts also have a very strong value in terms of being an external voice, particularly for those communities that are smaller and can get lost in the wilderness or electoral areas with lower populations. Regional boards and regional districts, particularly after 2000, when the changes made to the legislation by the province really moved, I believe, regional districts into being not just a service-providing body, but also a political body. They did that a lot by default before, but it was very much legitimized, I believe, in the legislation in 2000. And these external voices are probably, obviously, can be up to more senior levels of government, like the provincial government or federal government, can be across regions because there's lots of services and lots of issues that don't stop just at your regional district boundary, but go beyond that boundary. And then also the opportunity to not just partner within your regional district, but also develop partnerships with other regional districts. One often opportunity for regional districts that's not commonly understood is that regional districts are the basis of borrowing in the province, and that borrowing through the Municipal Finance Authority through regional districts and municipalities in your regional districts will be coming to you as a board, for those who are lucky enough to be on the board, to borrow on behalf of their community. And this collective mechanism or collective method of making people severally responsible for borrowing in the province has resulted in some tremendous borrowing opportunities and extremely low interest rates, some of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the country. So some very advantageous reasons just off the top for regional districts. But they do more than that. Regional districts have been around for just about 60 or 50 years now. As I mentioned, there's 27 of them. And back in the original mid-60s when regional districts were conceived, there was lots of other models, whether you're, as I am, from Alberta and used to the county or municipal district system or lots of other regional governments that were considered. But there's particularly five fundamental attributes that were considered during that time and follow through making up the personality of the regional district legislation to date. Firstly, as I mentioned before, it provides an opportunity for municipalities and electoral areas to do things that they typically couldn't do on their own. And the one best example of that is, again, the Municipal Finance Authority. While you could have borrowed on your own, as others do in other provinces, to get the rates and the access to the international markets that we are fortunate enough to do through the MFA just couldn't be done. Secondly, there was an objective of coordinating infrastructure. And this is particularly important in metropolitan areas for services like water, sewer, and parks, where, again, those services makes more sense, both from a financial and sometimes geographic perspective, to go beyond boundaries. Regional district, particularly the legislation, also recognizes the diverse needs of community. You'll hear often, particularly in talking with the provincial government, the expression, you know, one size doesn't fit all for this province. And regional districts are, in my view, structured in such a way that it really exemplifies the opportunity for different groups, different groups being different local governments, being able to get together and really provide a diversity of services and a mechanism of the legislation that makes it really easy to enter into those services jointly. You don't have to go through complicated negotiations and start necessarily with partnerships agreement at every time you want to do a service. It's inherent in the legislation and inherent in the way regional districts do things. Fourthly, they provide for flexible boundaries. And there's two advantages from my perspective around that ability to become very flexible on the boundaries is, firstly, it allows for only the people receiving the service paying for the service. And if you ever go to any of your establishment bylaws, which are really the partnership agreements that you'll see in your regional districts, you'll often see many of those establishing bylaws with a map attached. And that map can have little lines drawn right around individual lots to make sure those people who want to get the service pay for it. Very, very strong asset. And from my perspective, one of the traits that makes regional districts one of the most democratic forms of local government in Canada. And we can debate that for a long time, I'm sure. And finally, to provide services to the rural area. At the time, back in 1965, about 20% of the province was in unincorporated areas. A lot of the services were being provided by the provincial government, and there was a real desire to create a local governance body that could provide services locally and have citizens being able to access that local government a lot more directly. Okay. So, I'm on track. Another term you'll hear about regional districts, which for me is very, again, very unusual. You won't see it in a lot of other regional governments. For those of you who are from Ontario, Ontario and some of the Quebec regional governments, they have, those regional governments are actually an additional layer of government. Those regions have often regulatory authority over municipalities in areas like the environment and sometimes building inspection. There was an expressed desire on the part of the legislative folks back in the mid-60s to develop regional districts in BC as a federation. In other words, the regional government is not an additional level of government, but really a federation of those municipalities and electoral areas that are within their boundaries. Therefore, the municipalities particularly are on an even level with regional districts, and the regional districts have no authority unless it's expressly given over the municipalities. And the boards are made up of elected officials from those municipalities and from the elected directly from the rural areas. In the rural areas, the elected officials, as I'm sure many of you are here, are elected directly to the board by the electorate. Your electoral area almost acts like a ward system. So you're the representative, obviously, for that ward that has elected you. Municipalities, on the other hand, appoint their regional district board members. And we're going to talk a little bit later in a later slide how that's determined. There is one exception to that, and it's sort of, I would consider it a minor exception, but I know from my time in the Capital Regional District, both, there are a couple municipalities who really had a strong desire to have the electorate give a preference for those people who are elected to their council as to who may go on to the regional district. So on both the City of Victoria's ballots at the municipal government level and Saanich, they have a question. If the elected official wants to be considered to go to the regional board, they will have a question on the ballot for the electorate to be able to indicate a preference as to who they would like to see. And those councils are very, very vigilant about making sure that even though it's not legislative required or legally required, that the wishes of the public are adhered to. And it's typically the mayor goes automatically, but then whoever the highest vote getters are from the electorate around who goes to the regional board. Another interesting attribute of regional districts that you may or may not see in other regional governments around North America is that the chair is elected from the members on an annual basis. And, of course, this makes sure that the chair always has, or for the most part, on an annual basis, has the confidence of the board to be able to chair the meetings and be the representative of the regional board if necessary. Now, so how do you determine the structure? In other words, how many, I'm sure for those of you, and again, some of the very confusing parts of regional districts that often the media will have or public who come to a regional board meeting for the first time, they'll note that there may be three or five members from one particular municipality, only one from other municipalities, and they vote funny. You know, it's not always consistent how they vote and what they vote for, and how sometimes that vote adds up to over 100, and sometimes it's only the number of board members. Again, another part of confusion around the board, but in my estimation, one of the aspects of the board that make it that most responsible level of government. The board structure and the voting rules are really established in simplest terms as a representation by population method. And it really helps solve the problem of municipalities on the board and electoral areas on the boards having such diverse populations. There are, as I'm sure you're probably aware, some municipalities with as few as 250 people in it, and they can be sitting around the same board table with a community of almost 100,000 people. So how do you balance the voting when you have that sort of diversity on the board? Well, the province, in their wisdom, has designed those voting rules or the structure and I'm not going to get it into it in detail because we don't have that much time, but the number of votes that individuals have on the board are determined very simply. You'll take the population in your area, in your community, whether it's an electoral area or whether it's a municipality, and you divide by the voting unit that's been given to your regional district. And regional districts will have different voting units. It's set by the minister, so you have to go back and ask your clerk what your voting unit is. Divide the population by the voting units, and that gives that municipality or electoral area the number of votes, and you round up, because you can't have a partial vote, so you round up, and that gives you the number that you bring to the board table as a result of the population that you have in your community, and again, helping to establish that representation by population method. But then it goes one step further. The legislation takes those number of votes and divides by 5, and that gives you the number of board members that your municipality sends to the region. And again, you round up because you can't have a partial board member, even though sometimes you may. No. you just round up. Take my word for it. So again, I'm not going to give you examples. You can take your population and do those divisions once you find the voting unit. But I think it's important to understand that it's just not a simple mechanism of trying to establish a mechanism for representation by population and balancing the weight of the votes. It's an actual formula in the Act. And one of the comments from Mayor Drew last week, Mayor Drew is the mayor of Belcarra, for those of you who may or may not know him, and I think he's the longest serving elected official in the province, something like 33 years elected official, 31 as mayor. He had a very small community in a very large regional district, the largest regional district. And he got the question about these voting units because they are the ones that often cause the most contention and the most misconception around the board tables. And the question was from someone in Lions Bay. And he said, listen, I'm just a little guy. How are you going to tell me that I have any sway on the regional DVRD Metro board? And his quote, which I've written down because I'm going to use it, was, it's not about the vote, it's about the voice. And he went on to give some examples of how he, with very small municipality, very small votes, one person has been able to do amazing things in his municipality by his voice around the table, his ability to work with other people, and his ability to make connections within the GVRD to serve his community. So I'm just going to leave you with that. But there is one other set of what often is confusing aspects about regional districts that is established in the legislation to try and not to try, but to help balance the size of municipality, and that's around special voting rules. There are three voting rules that you will face, and you won't have to remember this, I hope. I expect that every one of your administrations, hopefully don't get the evil eye from Leanne on this, but every one of your administration, when you get your agenda, across every item where there's expected to be a resolution, the administration will tell you who gets to vote and which one of these mechanisms they are going to vote by. And if your municipality doesn't do that, go back and tell them to start. The unweighted corporate vote is the vote that I think you'll see most often. Now, that isn't always the case in every regional district, but for the most part, you get one vote for every seat that's around the table, and you're dealing with a good majority of business of the board, and it's typically around procedural and regulatory bylaws and matters around the board table. So there's not a lot of confusion around that. Public is sitting in the audience, and they see everyone put up their hand, and they're happy. But then they get into the weighted votes, and that's where the wheels start coming off the track. And a lot of people start fearing that the large municipality with all of that weighted vote is going to ramrod all of the other smaller municipalities. And it's where every director votes, and each casts a number of votes based on their population. That formula before that talks about the number of votes that your community gets, it's on this weighted vote voting rule that those weighted votes get put into play. And it's primarily, and it's a generalization. There are exceptions, and that's when we administrators go running to the lawyers to ask them, now, is this a weighted vote or a non-weighted vote? But typically, it's for financial decisions. So it's things like approving the budget and for contracts. Anytime you have that contract. Because again, I mentioned, everyone on the board is joint and severally responsible for the financial operation of all the other members. So the legislation allows for those members that have the biggest exposure financially to have the most votes around the table. And again, you don't often see this abused. I have certainly seen it abused. But generally, through the politics in the back room, those things get worked out. And it doesn't have to be a negative for around the board table. And the final one is the stakeholder vote. That is where a lot of the confusion arises, because you can have 23 people around the table and then only three put up their hand when they're voting on an important issue, like setting the user fees in an arena, for example. And the stakeholder vote is, as you would guess, only those people participating in the service get to vote. And again, it's usually for the service administration and operation. So I know there's a lot of misconception. I run into them a lot as an administrator, where a lot of the public think that big, humongous regional district is telling my little municipality how to run our recreation center, for example. And in fact, that's just not the case. The participants are there, and they are the ones who get to vote and have an influence around how that center is run. So we've talked a little bit about the board. And as I mentioned very early on, arguably the most important aspect of regional districts is service delivery. So for the next little while in terms of this presentation, I'd like to talk to you and introduce you to some of the services around the province that regional districts are performing on a day-to-day basis. And this looks very confusing, and you will have it is on the website, so if you want a copy after, you certainly can. But it's I think it's an important slide. And what it shows is sort of the three simple steps of establishing a service. A lot of electoral area directors get elected to do something, and the first thing they do is they are running into the administrator and they want to set up a service. And if you're in that situation, I hope this quick overview gives you a sense of the steps. So firstly, define your service. And that might sound obvious, but if you can recall, I mentioned those establishing bylaws. Those establishing bylaws are like a partnership agreement. And if for those in the private sector who may have been in partnerships before, you'll see a lot of the same attributes in a partnership agreement in the private sector as you see in the establishing bylaw. You define who the partners are going to be. You define how they vote and make decisions. You define how the costs are going to be distributed and revenue is going to be distributed among those partners. It really is a partnership agreement. So it's important for you, because as I said, I mentioned earlier that the service maps often go around individual lots. You really need to understand the service you want to provide and who you want to provide it to. And once you've done that, the second step is, who else makes logical sense to be involved with that service with me? And often the most logical ones are the municipalities or the electoral areas adjacent to you. Sometimes you can look beyond regional districts and look at other regional districts that can help pay for the service. And I think there is another session here today that talks about partnering and partnerships, and they'll talk about the values of that partnering, whether it's economic or administrative. There's real value in looking at partners. And so there's a number of different ways, and it's a bit of, I hope this works. Oh, yeah. So there's a number of ways that you can look at and you should think about providing the service. Is it a local service? In other words, is it something that makes most sense just to be provided in your area? And often it is. It can be six or seven people who want a street lighting service. No one else is going to be interested or of benefit. So you would typically, you'll hear it called the local service, and that's as far as you need to go in terms of looking at partners. However, there's a lot of other services that you might look at sub-regionally. In other words, you don't have to have everyone involved in the service, but who are the most logical ones? And it can be anywhere from 2 to 5 or how many others other than their whole regional board, where that would then be determined to be a region-wide service, and everyone would participate in the service. And then, as I mentioned before, there's an opportunity, and particularly around things like parks and 911, where it may make sense to go beyond your region. And so if you read the chart, and I'm going to go over the horizontal axis up there as well, but you'll start seeing how the chart has evolved. These are examples of local services that are provided currently at the regional district and in the RDs that are providing them. Here's some sub-regional services that often happen to make sense. And then the third step is, how do I want to deliver the service? And again, there's just happens to be four. It made the chart real easy to make. Common methodologies for delivering the service. Arm's length. At the Capital Regional District, this was a very popular method of providing service. It often referred to things such as commissions. We would establish bylaws to set the service and then define in the bylaw the authorities that the board was giving to the arm's length body, whether it's a commission or some other sort of legitimate corporate body that was providing the service. And the establishing bylaw would define when they had to report back and the extent of their authority to provide the service. And it's a very valuable mechanism, particularly around things that are very highly political in your community, and you want them to be able to operate efficiently without having to come to the regional board and the high profile that provides sometimes. This can be a really strong mechanism for delivering service, especially if they have existing bodies in your community that make sense to provide the service. Contract into the private sector, probably very obvious, and there's some examples around like recycling and garbage collection, which makes sense to be contracting out. Contracting to the public sector, maybe not so obvious. There's many examples around the region where one municipality, and I'll be giving you some more detail around that, where one municipality happens to have, or a group of electoral areas happen to have an expertise and a history on providing a service, and all you want to do is go in and access that service. And you can do it on a contract basis and keep the relationship very much a business relationship, so you clearly understand what to expect in a level of service by the other municipality. And here's some examples down here of contracting to other partners within the region. Again, as you can see, you're at local level, at the sub-regional level, Accord Transit, is that? Suburban Transit System. And then finally, direct provision. In other words, your own regional district has built up some expertise and can provide it the service with your own staff. I don't know of another area on a per capita basis that has provided and encouraged through legislation more services In partnership with different combinations of local governments in BC. Right now, there are currently over 3,000 of these types of partnerships that are being provided by the 27 regional districts around the province, which is an amazing number. That's maybe not an amazing number of services, but to think that there's that many partnerships where people are working together to get the lowest and the best quality of service to the citizens, I don't think you'll find it anywhere. So let's take a look at some of those services. Each regional district, as I mentioned, is very unique. The province started out, each regional district started out in the mid-60s with zero services being dictated by the provincial government. It was, you're here to provide general administration. Where you go from there is up to you as a regional body. And over the years, there's very few services that the province has dictated. One, of course, is landfill sites, and there is some around emergency planning in the rural areas. But by and large, today, it's still a question of what do you as a regional district want to provide and feel you can get the best value for your citizens out of providing. Some examples, and I'm going to quickly go through these. The Columbia Shuswap Regional District is a region that crosses three mountain ranges, making it a region of basically sub-regions. It has a large rural population clustered mainly around the region's four municipalities. CSRD's unique service personality is explained by its large rural population and large sub-regional population clusters. And you can see here the profile of their regional district. 60% of the region is rural, population of 50,000, so relatively small, sort of in the middle of the pack, 15 out of 27. Total expenditures annually in 2012 of $40 million, which represented about 68% of the total municipal local government spending within the region, providing 96 services and really focusing on rural and sub-regional service delivery. So the CSRD plays a real important role in that rural service delivery, as you would see from that profile of the CSRD, basically providing basic services like water, fire protection, and street lighting, and some sub-regional services such as recreation and fire protection. On the other hand, the Thompson-Nicola Regional District is split among 10 rural electoral areas and 11 non-contiguous municipalities, so very sparsely populated regional districts, with Kamloops accounting for about two-thirds of the TNRD total population. In contrast, all but one of the remaining municipalities has a population below 5,000, so a real disparity in how the region could work. Small towns, rural population, 128,000 population, 130 services. The unique thing that TNRD has been able to provide is a service bureau approach. In other words, when you have that many small municipalities, those small municipalities, some of which, are, as I mentioned before, have 250 people in them, the potential for the region to provide a service to electoral areas and then by the service establishing bylaw, but then contract to whatever municipality wants the service has been a real boon for those smaller municipalities. And as you'll see, particularly around building inspection, where you have the problems of different standards. If you had 10 small municipalities trying to hire their own building inspector, you'd have problems with poaching, even if you could find enough building inspectors. And then the mass that the region was able to establish that could provide training and professional management has really been a strong boon for that regional district. And as you'll see, again, as I get into it in a little more detail, it is by far the best example around the province of that service bureau approach to providing services. And thirdly, the Capital Regional District, very small rural population, only 7,000 people, 360 population, fairly large budget, and that doesn't include capital, 27% of total local government spending in the area, and well over 200 services. Primarily focusing, if you looked at the staff levels and the budget money, it's primarily focusing on those region-wide services such as planning, water supply, recreation, regional parks, an amazing regional park system. So, a little more in-depth. As we suggested in the previous slide, TNRD was established itself as a regional service bureau. Let's see, I can try to clip through this so I give lots of time to my partner here. I think I mentioned most of it all, 10 electoral areas and provide service directly to 9 smallest municipalities. The advantage, business benefits, it's a very strong, the business community is very strongly supportive of the system because regulations are harmonized and businesses that work between communities face a level playing field, highly professional service, scarce and expensive professional resources, and the costs are pooled. None of the municipalities could possibly pay, find the service like that cheaper than through the approach that TNRD has taken. In the Capital Regional District, some of those services that I mentioned, one of them includes a housing fund. The Capital Region has a problem with homeless people, and they've been able to establish 11 of their 13 municipalities in a housing trust where they contribute annually about $1 million to lever other housing funds to build housing in the Capital Region. And some of the unique things about that is we have 11 communities, but the housing is really only built in the 4 communities that are in the center of the region, the larger municipalities. But communities such as Oak Bay, for example, who was a participant, they recognize that it's a regional issue, and they recognize, because their community is totally built out, that that this is a way that they can contribute to the housing problem without having lots or an ability to be able to provide that service. And $1 million doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about housing, you're talking a lot about federal grants. And the federal government is always wanting to know how much you're putting into the pot before they're giving money. So over the short life of this service, the CRD has been able to lever that $1 million a year into well over $51 million worth of money to build housing within the Capital Region. And they work a lot with private housing agencies, not just the municipalities. Now, here's one that you may or may not be aware of, the North Island 911. And this is an example of 6 regional districts on the north end of Vancouver Island and parts of the mainland who have joined together to enter into partnership to create an emergency communications, dispatch, and response service. It is led by the CVRD, the Cowichan Valley Regional District, the Comox Valley Regional District, same acronym, and is governed by a board of administrators from the regional districts. They know the service was going to be expensive and complex, so not one of them had the desire to go on it alone. But the 6 regional districts developed a corporation, so it's a little bit of another twist on that arm's-length body. It's actually an arm's-length body directed by the districts themselves. They developed a corporation to deliver the service, but didn't want to provide the service themselves directly, and they had lots of resources within their region as well as just outside the region, so they've entered into a contract with ECOM to provide emergency communications out of the Lower Mainland to field all calls. They've got the RCMP to provide police dispatch, and the City of Campbell River provides fire dispatch, with the Provincial Ambulance Service providing ambulance dispatch. The resulting service is the largest 911 service in Canada, covering 56,000 kilometers. So, I'm just about ready to wrap up. Regional districts, I think, have a bright future. I know that every time, it sort of worked out almost every 10 to 15 years, there would be a call for doing a review of whether the province needed regional districts. And in every one of those reviews, the regional districts came out with more authority and more responsibility than the previous legislation provided for. So I think they have a hugely bright future. They are often considered dysfunctional and complicated. And whenever I hear that, particularly from the press in our region, I would tell them, especially after a board meeting that was particularly heated and people were not getting along and they were fighting across the table. Other than the, you know, you've heard it before, democracy is messy. But also, for me, that's when the regional districts are doing their business. That's what they're all about. When I was in Alberta, which was a long time ago, mind you, but if we had problems with the rural population, and I was city manager in Grand Prairie, we had to go to the province, to the minister, to solve our problems. And in BC, the province, being way smarter than those in Alberta, figured out they can keep a lot of their problems off their desk if they can create this regional body to deal with those local problems locally. And again, as Mayor Drew said, yeah, they deal with some real ugly issues at the regional board table, but by and large, over time, they find a way through those issues, and the region's better off for it. They offer an endless opportunity for you to provide services, as I said, especially after the 2000 legislative changes, and they tackle the tough issues. So in closing, what do we got here? I'm going to skip over that in the sake of time and go right to a closing slide. I had the opportunity a number of months back to sit on a panel in Saskatoon, where the city of Saskatoon and the city of Regina, and I know over 50% of this room is probably from Saskatchewan, so you'll appreciate this, they were experiencing large amounts of growth and were grappling with how do we deal with regional services for all of those small communities that are building up around our large community. And they had invited representatives from most regional governments around the province. There was five of us all together, some from the Maritimes, Ontario, Quebec, Alberta, who was dabbling in regional districts. And they had on the panel a professor by the name of Andrew Sankton, who's a well-regarded political scientist from the University of Western Ontario. And he listened to the whole thing. He'd done much research around the country and North America. And when asked the question, he was very emphatic. Regional district system in British Columbia is the best regional system that you can consider anywhere in of the options in Canada. He basically said that regional districts are a unique, made in BC solution to service problems faced but rarely resolved elsewhere. Canada's most flexible and successful system for regional and sub-regional government. It offers the best of both worlds, leaving municipalities the responsibility to do what they do best and allows those things that can be done cooperatively among others at the regional level, and is a partnership in the truest sense of the term, an arrangement that enables the urban and rural areas of BC to partner in making British Columbia communities better for the people who live there. Thank you very much, and if we have... if we have a little time after, I'm sure both of us will entertain questions.
Thank you very much, and that's really nice to for you to end on a happy note like that. We all know that regional districts are great, and we support that method of government, and it's nice to hear it affirmed someplace else. So I was asked to give a brief example of when our regional district worked together to achieve an outcome bigger or better than if it acted alone or as an individual jurisdiction, and then to describe one that an opportunity was lost. And it's been stated here that regional districts are able to do some different things. So when I was first elected a long time ago was when shortly after the provincial government mandated that regional districts become responsible for solid waste. So my first experience with being lobbied behind the scenes happened during that event when one of our larger municipalities, a new mayor, was trying to get me to commit to things, and I felt very uncomfortable at the time, and I thought, no, I can't do this. And there was a lot of give and take in that whole process. I mean, landfills in some cases were owned by some of the municipalities, but we were able to work through it so that it's a regional function now. All the garbage dump sites are owned by the regional districts. Some of our member municipalities are doing some different programs for recycling, that they were offering services pickup, like in town, for instance. But in the beginning, it was quite a daunting task to think you've got this function, and really when we look at our budget today, it's our largest budget item that we have is garbage. So from coming from a whole mismatch of things, We were able to implement all the rules that came into place. And I know in some regional districts, some of the larger municipalities are still retaining ownership and operation of their own landfill. So I think that we were successful in doing in coming to a good resolve to that. We've had... Kelly was talking about partnerships and how municipalities are perhaps providing a little bit of fire protection for an area where it doesn't make sense. That small area could not afford to do fire protection on their own, but they come to some type of arrangement where the municipality will increase their protection boundary and they will go out and provide service to your municipal or to your electoral area director, and we have that in a couple of cases. We had at our regional board a manager of works, and he started a program that actually not just some of our member municipalities. We have 13 rural fire departments in our regional district, but there was also some other regional districts that took advantage of a group purchase where they were purchasing a large group of fire trucks, and by doing that, they were able to get it at a reduced rate. So, we saved thousands of dollars, all of us, not just our regional district, our electoral area directors, but our member municipalities and the other regional districts that took advantage of that. When we first went out to do 911, the service was not going to be the same for everybody. The people, that was back in the days when, did anybody here have party lines? Yeah. So when you had party lines, when you dialed 911, your residents would not be able to be identified. So we didn't feel that that was fair. You weren't going to be getting a break on your taxes. You were still expected to pay the same, but you were not going to get the same advantage. So at that time, the board collectively made the decision to turn that function down. But, you know, a few years passed and it came again, and technology had improved, and we were able to offer equal service to everybody throughout the regional district. And that was great for all of us. And, you know, that's morphed since then. We've split things off a little bit. We have our fire service now being contracted out to Ecom, and we have our other service now, it's out of Kelowna. And nobody would be able to do anything like that on their own. You have to work together. And is it always smooth sailing? Of course it's not. You know, everybody has different areas that they are representing, and sometimes it impacts an area a little bit more than others. And it's, as has been said here, your responsibility to make sure that your constituents are represented. In our regional district, we have Shuswap and Mara Lakes, and Shuswap and Mara Lakes are fed by the Salmon River and the Shuswap River, and then it drains into the Thompson-Nicola Regional District. So we were facing a lot of things that were happening on Shuswap Lake. There was a lot of development, and a lot of people were dropping buoys in the water and putting in docks in the water, and it became quite controversial. And through this whole time, there was controversy about houseboating and contaminating the lake and all types of issues like that. So we formed a group called the Shuswap Lake Integrated Planning Process. And that was the Thompson-Nicola Regional District, the Columbia Shuswap Regional District, and a portion of the North Okanagan Regional District. And we had members of provincial agencies on that. And we were able to come up with kind of a plan and a document that worked for us. Was it non-controversial? No way. It was very controversial. But it just showed that collectively we have to look at something in a big way, because we are not isolated. We can't do it all ourselves. When something is flowing into us, we kind of have to look at what's coming in, and we have to look about what we're putting out at the end. We're still in the midst of working through that. The SLIP program has sunsetted, and we're coming to the time when we're talking about a water quality group. We're trying to put a governance group in place for that. But we can't do it alone, but we do have partnerships. Not all of them are financial partners, but it doesn't matter, as long as we're having the conversation around the table about what's happening to our greater area and how the impact on our greater area is going to be played out at the end of the day. As has been said, our regional district is quite separated. We have Golden in Area A and Revelstoke in Area B, and then we have the shoe swap. So for emergency planning, we have Golden and Area A doing their planning there, Revelstoke and Area B, and then the shoe swap. Sycamus and Salmon Arm may be able to do their own emergency planning. They're a fair size, but we've chosen to do it collectively where we have the two municipalities and the four electoral areas. And you know, many years ago, our plan for the shoe swap was a man by the name of Alf Ames. And we had a summer from hell where it rained and there was landslides and slippages and flooding and everything happened and we almost killed Alf Ames. So we knew that we had to do something. And I think through working together and deciding what type of plan we wanted to come up with, we've come up with a pretty good solid plan. We've got economic development and tourism promotion that's all about partnerships. Our tourism promotion, we have a community from the TNRD involved in our tourism promotion, and we have a municipality from the North Okanagan that's involved in our tourism promotion because they feel they're part of the shoe swap. So it's kind of neat how it gives you all these opportunities where you can create the function that suits the people in the region the best. It doesn't matter if you're all at the same local government table or not. Where there's a will, there seems to be a way. One of the projects that did not work well for us was we were working on a rail that was being divested by a local rail company, and there was members of the North Okanagan Regional District and myself as electoral area and one of the municipalities, and we were working together. Our keynote speaker last night was actually chairing the meetings. We were moving along quite nicely, and there was not, I guess, satisfaction with the speed at which how things were moving forward. I'm not really sure why, but one of the municipalities went off and signed a confidentiality agreement, and that opportunity may be lost for us now. If we are able to go ahead with that project, it will cost us the fair market value for this rail line that's actually going along a lake. So, you know, for the rest of us that were involved in the discussions, it was very, very disappointing and discouraging. And we're still hopeful that we can go forward and salvage something out of it. The First Nations in the area have been successful in getting the rail line that's within their boundaries granted to them, because that is what is supposed to happen through legislation. If the rail company is divesting itself of that and it is in reserve land, it goes back to the reserve. So, you know, we're working on that, and we're hopeful that we're going to be able to move forward on that, because to us at the table, it was the opportunity to secure a transportation link that could be used in maybe 100 years, and until then we could use it for trails, for tourism, for all kinds of different things. So we were sad about that. The second question that I was asked is, how do you or others you have observed effectively build relationships among board members? I guess the first thing I have to say is that you have to respect the person. You don't necessarily have to like them. It sure is nice, though, when you do like them. But you have to respect the fact that the community that they are representing liked them and trusted them and supported them and have put them in that position. So you respect who they are as the position. You have to respect the right that everybody has the right to an opinion. And, you know, I mean, you know you're right, but, you know, you're not always right. So you have to respect that. And don't take it personally if they vote differently than you or they have a different opinion than you, because everybody's life experiences make the way they look at things a little bit different. You have to be honest. I think that's just, you have to be honest and you have to be able to speak your mind clearly. You also have to be open-minded to understand that there could be something that you're not seeing and a reason why perhaps you should not be going forward, or you should be going forward with whatever it is. And I think probably one of the most important things, and sometimes when you're in the midst of a really heated discussion about something, you have to listen. And sometimes it's hard to listen when you're talking. And, I have to say that I am very guilty of that sometimes. You just ask my children and they'll tell you. But it's hard to listen, and you have to listen carefully and not have in the back of your mind, or you're kind of thinking about, the message that just came in or something. You have to listen carefully because your fellow colleagues deserve that respect for you to listen. And I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Rona, you're going to be around this evening for a little while. Kelly, are you staying or are you headed out to Kelowna? Yeah. So if you want, you can hook Kelly on the way out the door if you have an immediate question. We're supposed to conclude about 10 or 15 minutes ago, so we're going to wrap this session, move into the last session of the day, trying to keep you on schedule as much as we can. So we'd ask you to give a round of applause for our presenters this afternoon. Thank them very much for their time, and I'd ask the collaboration panel to come immediately to the head table, and we'll move right in and get started. Thank you.